know, there's three things that really motivate people, and, you know, autonomy, having purpose, and having mastery. So we want to be good at what we do. We don't want to be micromanaged, and we want to believe in what we're doing. And that last part, believing, is easy in veterinary medicine because we're taking care of animals.
There is a depth and a breadth to our lives that largely goes unexplored. As an equestrian life mindset coach and host of this podcast, I am here to lead you on that exploration. Deep conversations covering topics in and out of the show ring with industry leaders and unsung heroes alike, sharing their stories and what makes their journey unique, but relatable at the same time. We all have stories to share and lessons to trade, something we've learned from a horse or from each other. So relax and be ready to listen with more than just your ears. I'm Tracy Mitchell. Welcome to Hitting Your Stride. Hello, everyone, and a big welcome back to you all. As horse owners know, one of the biggest responsibilities they have is making their horse's health their top priority. This includes everything from their feed, exercise, and routine visits from their primary supervising health caregiver, their veterinarian. Veterinarians are the support system and in some cases the lifeline to a horse's longevity, ability to compete in the ring, and most importantly, to living a healthy and vibrant life. In most cases, visits with the vet are routine, but there is always the other side of the coin that we all wish never had to happen. In those moments that are heart in your throat, gut-wrenching moments, we then rely on not only their expert knowledge, but also their compassion and understanding of the love and relationship we have with our horses. Today, I am fortunate to have with me Dr. Mike Pownell of McKee Pownell Equine Services. With an education in communication studies and biological sciences and working as a farrier for 7 years, Mike then graduated with a doctorate of veterinary medicine from the University of Guelph in 2001. In 2002, Mike and his wife, Dr. Melissa McKee, started up the McKee Pownell Equine Services. And this veterinary practice has developed into a multi-location business with 14 vets and 30 support staff servicing all horse breeds and disciplines. In 2015, Mike completed an executive MBA at the Ivy School of Business at Western University in London, Ontario. And with this added education, Mike then went on to partner in and develop Oculus Insights, which provides veterinary business consulting that assists equine veterinarians across North America, the EU, and Australia. Along with Mike's business portfolio, he is also very involved in the equestrian community with his long list of volunteer activities, most notably and most recently with the Ontario Equestrian for the Herd Fund Allocation Committee. This assisted in providing help for schooling horses affected during the pandemic. Welcome, Mike, and thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to sit and talk with me today.
It is my absolute pleasure, Tracy. Thanks for having me.
Well, this is great. We were just chatting before we pressed record. It's been a while since we've seen each other.
It has been. It has been.
Yeah. All right. So let's get started. What is the best descriptor for Mike Pownell? Is it driven, inspired, compassionate, or is it something else?
I don't want to be flippant. It depends on the day and time of the day. Sometimes I think if I was going to describe, driven for sure, curious. I think in terms of what we do with McKee Pownell, like our purpose, why we do what we do is to ensure horse owners have peace of mind in the healthcare decisions. I hate injustices. I hate when people feel left out. And I think that's what drives me more than anything. I think you mentioned before my background was in communication. You know, I started all this. I was in theater and filmmaking and all that. I love connecting and I love making sure that people grasp what's going on. You know, when you're dealing with the health of the horse, and as you said in the introduction, you have, you know, routine vaccines and dentistries, that's wonderful. But then you're on the farm at 11 at night and you have a horse in real distress. And you've got to make some really painful decisions. And knowing that the horse owner you know, depending on whatever the decision could be, is confident that that is what's best. And I think that's what drives me more than anything. And I think that drives me in terms of how we've created our business. Really, we really have a focus on taking care of people in our business, taking care of our employees. We really have a people first kind of business. And so I think that's what drives me.
And I know when you and I first met years ago, you know, as, you know, the registered equine massage therapy. So we had mutual clients and I know that I was really grateful for your ability to communicate and, you know, include me in the treatments that were going on and, you know, asking me, hey, did you want to come and watch this? Did you have any questions? And so from a person who works on that healthcare team, you know, having that ability to know that I could come to you with questions about, you know, a certain treatment plan or whatever, it was very satisfying to me. I felt like I was supported with your knowledge and input, and I was very comfortable in approaching you.
Well, thank you very much. I remember those days, and it's like, I mean, we are a team, and one part of the team can't do everything. And, you know, one of the things that frustrates us the most is not everybody wants to be a team player, and who suffers of it is the horse owner. But when you have somebody like yourself, who's like, all right, let's get in this together. Let's leave egos at the door. Let's do what's best for the horse and what the rider want. That's the best.
Yeah.
You know, I think as you alluded to in the intro, I was a professional farrier, full-time farrier for 7 years before I became a vet. And that influenced me a lot in terms of, because I was in positions where vets didn't want to talk to the farrier. And I knew I had some insights. And I just felt like, you know, if the two of us were just talking, we could do a lot more. Mm-hmm. So let's leave the ego at the door and let's do what's best for the horse.
Yeah. And I can honestly say too, that anytime there is a vet from McKee Pownell at a barn where I am working, and we have mutual clients, it's definitely that team effort, and they're wonderful that way. So yeah.
Good. That's good to hear.
Awesome. So as a leader in your field, what are your thoughts on the mental stress and state of being overworked that many equine vets are experiencing right now? Given the mental health crisis a lot of vets seem to be dealing with, should there be more of an emphasis on self-care?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, there's a lot going into this. So prior to the pandemic, this is a really sad statistic. Veterinarians, not just equine, but veterinarians yeah. across the world have the highest rate of suicide of any profession. Yeah. And that's a lot of research that came out. And this is in Australia, North America, Europe. You know, we have the enviable position of being a leader in something. Nobody really knows what the factors are. You know, because a lot of it, I would think, because I've done some research with veterinarians of my side gig, is since the advent of social media, people go online and are, you know, there's less boundaries, there's less barriers. People can say what they want. And so, you know, a vet can give everything of themselves to a patient and have tried to do the best thing. And then all of a sudden a thread starts online about how the vet did this or did that, or was just in it for the money, blah, 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 blah. And it's just devastating. It's just devastating. So I think there's a lot of compassion fatigue too, as veterinarians, we're the only medical profession that, you know, routinely euthanizes their patients. And so when you've had relationships with people, when you've had horses for 30 years and you're the vet that, you know, helped fold it out and you're the one putting it down and, you know, that has the impact. Yeah. Since the pandemic, it's gotten worse. And now it's gotten so bad that in the veterinary profession, again, globally, there is an extreme shortage of veterinarians. And there's even more of a shortage in equine practice. So it used to be prior to the pandemic, maybe 2-3% of students graduating from an American Veterinary Medical Association accredited college, like Ontario Veterinary College is, would go into equine. So that's not a lot. That's maybe 150 a year. Now we're almost at 1%. And so we're not even replacing the vets that retire. We can't even account for the growth of the profession or industry. So in all of North America, maybe 50 vets or maybe 50 students want to go into equine practice. And just to make it even worse, 50% of those will leave the profession in 5 years. So we are really in a crisis in the equine profession. And, you know, people are starting to wake up within the profession going, what's going on wrong? And a lot of it was, well, we're not graduating the right kind of students. I don't think that's true. I think a lot of it when they survey people is the hours, for sure. It's a dangerous profession. As anybody who's involved in horses knows, it's very dangerous. The pay is not comparable to what a companion animal vet would get typically. And so you're working more hours in a more dangerous position. You're doing a lot of on-call, and your colleagues or your classmates from vet school are working fewer hours, making more money in a safer environment. And so a lot of them are like, this is why. And this goes back to when I say we have a people-focused business is when we started the practice, Melissa and I, you know, like 20 years ago, we realized even then, regardless of gender or age or whatever, people didn't want to do the typical 24/7 that was associated with an equine vet. That was a thing of the past. And people wanted to work like other professionals and have weekends off and have nights off. And the, you know, that being a martyr to a profession wasn't going to happen regardless of the species. So that's one of the reasons why McKee Pownall got so big so quickly or purposely is the more vets we have working for us, the more on call we can share, the more people can have a life outside of what they do. And I think that's why we purposely have tried to develop it. So one of the things we really work on with our vets, and you're starting to see this more and more in across the world of equine vets, is that emphasis on self-care, of not working the heroic hours, taking the time off, and realizing that it's not sustainable how we do things.
Yeah. Yeah. In the area that I'm in, you know, I work closely with a couple of vets, and there's probably four, because one recently retired, and, you know, talking to this one vet, they said that they and the other vets were kind of chatting, and they realized that if one of them retired, that our entire area is going to be at risk, because yep, who is left can't handle it all. And it's quite scary. And nothing saying anything about cattle vets, but I've had clients that have had to call on a local vets where, you know, a cattle vet has to come out and just kind of tend to whether it's the basics or what. And it's just like, whoo, this is actually happening.
Yep. You wouldn't want me to go to deal with a cow with bloat. So I get it.
Yeah.
You know, we're good at what we do. And there's a reason why we bring our cats to a small animal vet for spays and neuters and in general care, because we're not small animal vets. So right, it is a problem. It's an industry-wide problem, because it's not just an equine, it's companion animal, it's everywhere. So the Globe and Mail had an article on this in the fall of 2021, and the shortage is so severe in Canada, they say it's going to persist till 2040.
Whoa.
So we're talking 18 years.
Yeah.
Because of increased pet ownership and declining numbers of people going into the profession in general.
Oh my goodness. So what kind of... like what kind of mental health self-care, like does McKee Pownall offer your staff this, or like is in your other involvements, is this a topic that you're always trying to help promote and educate people on?
Yeah, absolutely. So first thing we started to do, and I discovered this when I graduated from my MBA, I was reading an article in the business magazine on employee engagement survey, or just employee engagement. And they're talking about it in regards to large corporations. And I was like, you know what, this applies to a small business like ours as well. So we did that. We did the survey in the spring of 2016. And, you know, it gave us some insights into what was going on with not necessarily our veterinarians, but our support staff, what have you. And what we realized is that our vets were on the verge of burning out. And as I said, when there's fewer people coming into it, you want to protect who you have. And that's when we changed to the 4-day work week for our vets.
Oh.
Because, you know, it was like, All right. It's a break. It's with on the on call, with client communication, just the demands of the jobs. By the time we get to June, after our, you know, our busy season starts mid March and goes till end of June, but it sort of, you know, carries on till the Royal, you know, but by June, everybody's had enough. And we're like, that's just not good. Like, and so that's when we went to the 4-day work week. And right away, we saw the next year that the scores went up. The vets were a lot happier. We were able to satisfy our client needs because they're more engaged. And I started getting emails from our vets saying, I'm enjoying being a vet again. You know, I'm actually able to read journal articles. I have time to read journal articles and actually be a better vet. And so what happened is I think our vets were like, when they're on their 4 days, they're on and they're giving their all, but they know they have an extra day to take care of themselves.
Yeah.
We offer coaching, professional executive coaching. That's what's typically called executive coaching, but we offer coaching to all of them. You know, we all get into stuck. We all get into a problem. And so by having access to a coach that we pay for, it helps people realize there's alternatives to the path that they're going on. We allow people that, you know, extended time off and slower time of year. So one of our vets one of our locations said, I have an opportunity to go to New Zealand for the winter and sort of like a, you know, a working holiday. And I was like, you know what? We have enough people. It's a slow time of year. Go for it. Get a new perspective on life.
Yeah. That's great.
And so we try to find those things, you know, just, and even with our support staff, we do a lot of internal education, a lot of training just to let people grow and develop. I think all of us, regardless of what industry, what we're doing, you know, there's three things that really motivate people and, you know, autonomy, having purpose, and having mastery. So we want to be good at what we do. We don't want to be micromanaged. And we want to believe in what we're doing. And that last part, believing, is easy in veterinary medicine because we're taking care of animals.
There's so much you said there. This conversation is awesome. One of the things that you touched on and the way you ended your statement right there is so true. I mean, I think on a day-to-day basis, you know, horse owners maybe forget the bigger picture and, you know, you can, like, I see every time I see a vet, I know they look tired, but everything you described that you offer your vets, yes. I mean, they're looking after other people's animals. I think that's part of their increased stress. They're doing it because they love the animals. They're doing it. So there's almost like this personal investment involved. And like you said, in some cases they're that animals, that horse's vet for years. I know I feel that way about my massage clients. And so, yes, I think that's something definitely that's added to the relationship and to that added stress and to everything that they carry home with them at the end of the day.
Yeah. And more research is coming out in terms of, you know, why is it that this stress more than other professions? I don't want to sit there like, oh my God, we're poor vets, but there is a cause and effect.
Yeah.
And when you start seeing this, like, substantially higher suicide, burnout, leaving the profession, right? There's something to it. There was a recent study from the American Veterinary Medical Association in the fall of 2021, where veterinarians were leaving their jobs twice the rate of human physicians, and registered veterinary technicians were leaving their jobs at a higher rate than nurses. So there's, you know, and we know what's going on. People coming out of the pandemic, they talk about the Great Resignation, particularly in the United States.
Yeah.
It's affecting the veterinary profession at a higher rate than other industries.
Whew, that's a lot to...
I bet you weren't expecting that in our conversation.
Yeah. Well, I did ask the question, but I knew you'd have a lot of info there. Wow. All right. So did you always know this was the path you were going to walk, going from farrier to vet to MBA? How different is it from what you had pictured when you first started?
Oh, I am so not where I thought I was going to be. When I was in high school, I was like the drama kid, and I went to Concordia University in communication studies, and I was part of that first cohort that was doing, like, you know, accessible video making and computer animation and what have you. I went to a high school reunion, 30th anniversary, and I think I was the biggest surprise because everybody remembered me in high school, and they're like, you're a veterinarian, you're a horse veterinarian, and I was just like, you could just see people looking at you just like, no. So you know, and then I, you know, I grew up downtown Montreal. I was a city kid. Like I did not know horses, but I had the good fortune of starting to take riding lessons, and I fell in love with it. And, you know, somebody had bought me a 10 pack of lessons, and by the seventh, I signed myself up. And then within a year I had my own horse. And then at the time I was living in Cape Breton Island in Nova Scotia, when the farrier would show up, he'd come every 3 weeks on a route. And if a horse pulled the shoe the next day, you'd have to wait 3 weeks for him to come back again. So I was like, this is ridiculous. So I went to the Oklahoma Farrier School, at least to learn how to put shoes on or to take care of my own horse. And I fell in love with that. And so that's when I decided I'm going to pursue being a horseshoer. And I did that for about 5 years. But you know, as you know, I'm a tall guy, and mm-hmm. my back was killing me. I'm 6'4". I'm too tall and too wimpy to be a farrier. Honestly. And I was sort of looking at options. And you know what it's like when you're having a farrier with a really good client, because you're there so often. And you talk about a lot of things. And so I was sharing with a very good client my frustrations and my uncertainty what I wanted to do. And she's like, you should go to vet school. And it was the literal proverbial light bulb went off. And I was like, you're right. She was right, because as a farrier, I had the good fortune of apprenticing with a farrier who became a vet in the United States. And all we did was work on lame horses. And I was so fascinated by lameness, but I was limited in my knowledge of the farrier. I didn't know the whole other body systems. I couldn't x-ray, I couldn't do nerve blocking, what have you. And so, yeah. And so I started doing all my undergrad courses. So I had never taken a science class before I got into my undergrad. And I remember like in my first biology midterm, I was like, so I used to do the arts in English, and you could sort of BS your way through it. You know, talk about themes, and it was all very gray. And I was like, this is black and white. So it was a real mind shift in how I did things. And and I was fortunate to get into OVC. There I met my wife, and then we started the practice. I always wanted to have my own practice. I'm a horrible employee. I'm just a bad employee. And I knew what we wanted to do. She and I, Melissa and I, had a vision of what we wanted the practice to be, and we thought, let's do it. The MBA, I don't know, I did my MBA when I turned 50, so that was my midlife crisis. Other people buy a Corvette and mistress. I decided to go get an MBA, and that was a blast. I loved it. I loved it so much. I graduated as a class valedictorian, which was a big honor for me. I just realized at the age of 50, I don't have much more timeline to make dumb mistakes. So how do you get smarter? You can make mistakes when you're in your 30s. You have a lot of time to recover. But when you make mistakes in your 50s, you don't. And so, and it opened up a whole new world for me. And I just love it. I'm just so glad I did that.
That's awesome. And you know what? I didn't realize, so your story about, you know, getting into sciences and all that kind of stuff. I was the exact same way when I took the massage therapy school, like the program of 2200 hours, you know, all that kind of stuff, full anatomy, full physiology. My science credit in university was the history of medicine. So that should tell you where I was at. So I was in the exact same place when I got into the equine massage therapy program. I was really nervous about all those sciences, but once I just dove into it and I could connect it to the horse and a passion of things I really wanted to learn, I ended up graduating from there with the award of excellence. So
there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's funny. That's awesome.
I remember reading, I had my first biology textbook and just reading it. I'm like, who knew this existed? I'm like, well, obviously a lot of people, they wrote a book on it. And I was just like absolutely fascinated by it. Yeah. And I remember like in organic chemistry, I loved it. Oh my God, I loved it. I got an A+ on the final. And I remember like friends looking at me like, you have five heads. So I'm like, no, I just thought it was the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah, I could stay home on a Friday night and not go out to the bars because I wanted to study anatomy. Who knew?
There you go. I get it. I totally get it.
All right. So you are passionate about promoting this industry outside of what it is that you do, as shown by all the volunteer work you do in support of the equine community. So yes, you are on the Ontario Equestrian Board of Directors. You are also on the Equestrian Canada Industry Development Committee as well. What kind of opportunities do you see for equestrian sports that show it as accessible, and a valued activity?
You know, you have to give back. I mean, so many people opened doors for me, paved a path for me. To not give back to me is a great act of selfishness. We've all had mentors. We've all had supporters. It's an honor to be able to do that. So why do I give back? Well, to do that. But I also think of the absolute joy, confidence, discovery, so many emotions in terms of when I first got involved in horses and that horse community. You know, it's an amazing community. And, you know, you want that to persist for other people. It's the relationship between the rider and the horse. It's spectacular when it all works well. It's spectacular. And why shouldn't everybody have that opportunity? So you look at that, you look at where we are in the greater Toronto area and you're like, yeah, there's a lot of history about horses, but you also see this area changing so much. It's growing so fast. It's, you know, Toronto is the most ethically diverse city in the world. It's really fantastic. And you can say that about a lot of the major centers in Canada. And you're like, everybody should know about this. You know, really, that's what it should be. Everybody should know about this. That should not be considered a sport of elites, or you've got to be phenomenally wealthy. It would help, but you don't have to be to enjoy it. And there's so many levels, and it's not just hunter jumper or dressage. I mean, the Western world is growing. It's huge in the States. Entry level classes and shows. I mean, just it's that community that it makes it so much fun. And I just, let's everybody be part of that. Yeah. I hate to see this industry die out.
Yeah. I mean, I've been on the receiving end of your mentorship and I've always appreciated that. And I can kind of see what you're talking about. It's so funny because in some ways it feels like an elite sport. And I guess maybe depending on some of the circles and the clients I'm working on, you could kind of get lost in that, but there's something coming back up. There's something bubbling. And I think the pandemic did that. I think people are like, you know what? I want to do something new. I'm going to start taking riding lessons. And it's really starting to grow.
Yeah, I agree. And they get on a horse. And then like me, it was like a city kid. Also, you're like, wow, who knew? And then if they're hooked for life.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I think, you know, and that's one of the things when I was interviewed for the board of Ontario Equestrian, and they did such a phenomenal job interviewing people and selecting people. I was like, you know, we always look at equestrian as the three English disciplines. Mm-hmm. But you know what? If you look in rural Ontario, rural Quebec, where I've spent time in rural Alberta, there's a lot of other equestrian sports going along that are very accessible. Hmm. And you don't have to break the bank to buy a competitive horse.
Yeah. So. All right, Mike, how do you make all of this happen? Sometimes people have a goal for their business dreams, but can never get them off the ground. So how have you been able to set yourself up for the successes you've had and the future ones you still strive for?
Honestly, I mean, there was a clear vision from day one. So when Melissa and I started the practice, three things we wanted to do. One, have enough vets that they can have quality of life. Two, be able to pay our support staff a living wage. When we were students spending time at vet practices, a lot of the support staff, if they didn't have a significant other that had a quote unquote real job, they were making poverty wages. And I'm like, for the education, the knowledge that they have, that's not right. And then the third was, a lot of the veterinarians at that time didn't appreciate the human-animal bond that horse people had with their horses. It was very much like, oh, horse is just a commodity. And, it's one of many, who cares? But it's like, no, people want that connection. They want communication. They want to feel listened to. And so we had those three things are what drove us from the very beginning. I know a lot of people are like, why do they grow so fast? They just must be greedy. I was like, no, honestly, we just want to make sure we have a great place to work. How do I make it happen? I'm also really curious. Love ideas. I read a ton still. And I'm always trying to think, you know, there's got to be a better way of doing this. There's always got to be a better way. And I think the real key is I surround myself with people that are much smarter and more skilled in other areas than I am. It takes a team. And so when you interact with the people that work with me, us at McKee Pownall, I work with such amazing people. If it was just me, no, it would not be happening.
Wow.
Not at all. So it's a team. And I'm with some really gifted people that makes it happen. I have great ideas and I bounce them off them. We work together. They bring me great ideas. We bounce it off. It's a real collaboration and all striving for the same thing.
Nice. Well, what's that old saying? Teamwork makes the dream
work.
There you go. Yeah.
No, you gotta hire better. You don't want to be the smartest person at the table. You want to be with great people that challenge you and make you better.
Yeah. I love learning too. I'm always open to sitting down with other people and, you know, just hashing out ideas and just getting excited about stuff.
Yeah.
New ideas. So what is the typical day like for you? What about it would people be surprised to hear you say?
My day is divided into reds and blues. So the reds are all my work that I do from McKee Pownall. Hmm. Blue is all the work I do with Oculus Insight. So on my calendar, I can look at it and it's a real mixture. I think, you know, every day is going to be some webinars or Zoom calls with people. With Oculus, I have clients in Australia and California, Middle East. And so I'll probably spend 1 or 2 hours a day on a call with a client. I'll spend the rest of the day working at one of our clinics, working with our vets, spending time. We've welcomed a lot of new vets into our practice. So I want to make sure they get the culture of McKee Pownall, how we take care of clients, how we take care of horses. So I spend a lot of time with them. But I spend a lot of time planning, and just trying to, you know, think what's going to happen. We're coming out of the pandemic in Ontario, knock on wood.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's this horrible war going in Ukraine and gas prices and inflation. So every day is a challenge. And I feel a strong responsibility for the 54 people that work for us, that they have a secure job that they can keep on growing and we'll take care of them. So that's what my day is like.
Yeah. What's the best part about your job and what makes it the best part?
I love getting compliments about our vets and staff. That to me, it makes my day. So we have an internal Slack channel where we have gold stars, where we celebrate what people have done above and beyond or have gotten great news. And I love when somebody shares, oh, I just got feedback from this person or that person. We've gotten so many great new vets and you're always worried, how are they going to integrate? How are they going to get welcomed? And I think our clients welcome our new vets very well. And when you get feedback or you get, you know, we send out client surveys and people talk about, oh, so-and-so in the office was so nice and made me feel so special. I'm like, that's my day made.
Woo-hoo. Yeah. So can you make sure that you enter my appreciation on your Slack channel?
Yeah, I will. Okay. I will.
Okay. Awesome. So after everything you've accomplished and the growth you've seen McKee Pownall experience, do you still look at horses the same way you did as when you were a farrier or a vet when you first started out? Like, I know for me, almost going into my 24th year of massaging, you know, I still get that connection the moment I lay my hands on a horse and I still enjoy the connections with the clients and stuff. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's funny. I can never look at a horse and just say, oh, that's such a pretty horse. No, my eyes go to the top line. My eyes go to the, you know, the muscling.
See, opposite. I'm starting with the farrier. I realized when I became a vet, I have a foot fetish because I was like forced myself to look above the fetlock and look at the whole horse. And I don't practice clinically as much anymore. I've had some injuries from my farrier days. And so I still am around. I love spending a day with one of our vets on the road, seeing the interaction with them and the horse owner, seeing patients of ours come back from the brink or a problem and to do well. So what I do is different, but why I do it is still the same. And just seeing horses and the owners do more than they thought possible.
I love that answer. That's great. And so when you travel around with one of your vets, is it more of on a consulting? So consulting way, like where they want you.
Let's just hang out. And I want to learn from them. You know, we've welcomed some vets from different countries over the last year. So we have a new vet from Germany, one from originally from Spain, and three from Mexico, all outstanding vets. And I've learned so much from them. The horsemanship, the way they look at horses, their approach to medicine. We all do things a little differently. Mm-hmm. The end result's pretty similar. And so I just love looking at the world through their eyes. Now, as young vets, I like going there because I like to, you know, if they're in a jam or there's an awkward situation with the client, you know, like you're doing a pre-purchase exam, there's so many potential conflicts or tense situations in there. So it's nice to be able to give some guidance on particularly client communication, but it's also nice when they're, you know, they're sort of at a wall, they're in an impasse, you know, they're trying to block out a lame horse and like, try this or try that. It's that's gratifying. Yeah. I love seeing people develop. And so that's, you know, so going and spending time with our vets and their vet assistants and just seeing how people work, that's a blast.
That's great. Yeah, I love that too. All right. So one of the qualities you listed in your bio for me was leadership. And part of being a strong leader means you need to be strong in self-leadership. Can you identify what goes into strong self-leadership and why it's so important?
I think there are two main factors. Number one is a sense of humility and with open ears. You've got to be listening. As you know, there's a great definition of leadership. The leadership doesn't answer the questions. The leadership sets it up so others can answer the question. And so you're creating an environment for others to do great things. A leader is about putting together a vision of where this business is going to go and to help others achieve it, to be even better than they thought they can be. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have to have that humility in the service of others. It's not like it's my way or, you know, the highway or follow me. It's like, no, it's, I'm going to help you be better at this. And so with that comes a strong level, and this is always a work in progress, of strong emotional intelligence, being aware of the impact you're going to have on others or how others impact you. You talk to people that worked with us in the late 2000s. I was not a nice guy. I made a lot of people cry. I don't like to admit it, but it's true. Because I am at the time much more impulsive, much more driven, not really sure of how other people should be. And you know, one day you wake up and you're like, you know what? We spend the majority of our waking hours at work. It should not be a place of trauma for somebody. When a big 6'4" older gray haired guy starts freaking out, like that's not a good place for anybody to be in. So let's be a little kinder. Let's understand what pushes me to erupt like that. Mm. And so there's been a lot of learning, being aware, understanding what are my triggers, how they impact other people. And, you know, since I've made that shift and really reflected on my impact on others, you know, I'm not saying it is who I am. So it's moderated. It's kind of like the Hulk, you know, you never want to be in the position when the Hulk goes off. But you know, it's sort of, as one associate said to me once when she came and spent time after being a student, and there's a situation where I could just see, she was like, he is going to erupt. She was like, oh my God, you're like Buddha now. And I'm like, I mean, really, life is too short. And that's a driving factor, is we do spend the majority of our working hours together. And it should be a good place. And it should not be a drain. It should be rejuvenating. You know, we've been doing a lot of interviewing because we're growing to add people to the office. And to me, it's one of the positions of privilege that I never really appreciated so much until recently. You've got these young people that just finished university or finished college or finished working with a trainer or what have you. They're moving on to the next step. And you have a choice as a leader of you can open up doors for them, give them the confidence to take on the world, or you can totally scar them and screw them up.
Yeah.
And say, I don't want anything to do in this horse industry. To me, it's an easy solution, but you need to have discipline as that leader to recognize I'm creeping over to the other side.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
a little bit more genuine and kinder on the other side.
As you described self-awareness or emotional intelligence, I mean, I guess, isn't that one of the benefits of getting over the 50 mark? Because then you realize, you know, you can kind of look back and then look forward and you say, okay, where do I want to be here? I know that with the life coaching that I've gotten involved in, I mean, I've always been a huge fan of personal development. I love growing, pushing myself, understanding the whys of what I do, etc. So yeah, I can completely see that. And I think that sort of evolves into the self-leadership of recognizing when changes need to be made within ourselves. How can I become a better person and interact better with people and basically get more out of your life?
Absolutely. And so you hope that you're having that positive influence. So when people move on and people move on, that they realize this is how it can be. And, you know, I will in turn treat other people in a better way. So it's a tough life out there. It's a tough profession. And so if there's an area where it could be a refuge and a place to recalibrate and to grow, to develop, why not? I mean, one of the things I have the hardest time getting through to our new vets is you can make a mistake. You know, in veterinary medicine, mistakes can be terrible, but we learn from mistakes. What we don't want to do is repeat the mistakes. But if you're going to make a mistake, own it, share it. We're all going to learn from it and we'll be better for it.
Yeah. All right. So, you know, in the aspect of self-leadership, it also is like looking after yourself and recognizing, you know, when you need to take a time out and all that kind of stuff. What's the most recent thing that you can say you've learned about yourself through this process, other than not turning into the Hulk?
I need to have a certain level of physical activity. And so for the longest time, because of injuries from, you know, as a vet and as a farrier, I wasn't as active. And I will admit, I was at a vet conference before the pandemic hit. And I was at a hotel and they had a Peloton bike. And I said, I used to love riding a bike when I was a kid, but everything hurts. But I'm going to try getting on the bike. And I was just like, oh, yes. So I try to ride about 4 or 5 times a week. And even though this takes an extra hour in the day and you're like, well, we have so few hours as it is, it helps me focus. It helps clear my mind. And so I'm better for the other hours.
Awesome. Yeah. So that's all we can. I've learned, I think I turned 50 last year and I think I've learned to really make myself a priority. I have to invest in that time. And it has definitely paid off. I'm feeling sort of getting back into the more physical health, mental health, and booking time for me.
We have to. And I think in the horse industry, we have such a, it's 24/7, go, go, go. I was like, no, you know what? It's diminishing returns. If you're tired, your mind's somewhere else, you're not effective. You're not as good as you think you are.
Yeah.
Step aside for a bit and regroup. Yeah.
Awesome. Mike, this has been an amazing conversation. I really thank you for your transparency and the answers that you were able to give our listeners and open up some eyes and some ears and some hearts about what's going on in the world of equine veterinary science. So it's much appreciated.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. And thank you for the opportunity. And it's fun how life takes you, because I remember when we first started working together years ago on common cases. So it's wonderful that you've taken this path too. So congratulations. Oh,
thank you very much. You take care.
You as well.
So there you have it. I have some great interviews lined up for future episodes, and we'll be covering some pretty interesting topics, as always, with the intent to open and engage the horse world on a wide variety of issues. So until next time, keep your eyes forward and continue to hit your stride. To stay current with Hitting Your Stride, subscribe on my website or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. If you like what you've heard here today, make sure you share and leave a comment to help guide future episodes and widen the audience. And be sure to check out social media to keep up to date with Equestrian Elements Life Coaching.